by our hosts, wall crosses, statues, and rosaries. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net/store.
This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Most young adults don't belong to any organized religion.
A hotel has replaced their Gideon Bibles with 50 Shades of Grey.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
According to what's called a bias-free language guide, the word American is problematic.
You've got to be kidding.
This is madness.
The world is flawed, but it can be redeemed.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
You framed it so beautifully, Al.
I haven't heard anybody else ask this question.
I've been looking forward to this.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
Places, it's showtime.
Action.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta, and we are here in South Bend, Indiana, at Redeemer Radio. And we are really, it's the first time, in fact, that we've been to South Bend a few times. This is the first time we've been able to work things out and work with Redeemer Radio here. We've worked with Redeemer so many times, especially in Fort Wayne over the years. But it's great to be here today. All week, we are going to be having some of the most outstanding Catholic professors from the University of Notre Dame with us to talk about the issues that matter most. Let me tell you, today, Dan Philpott joins us. Dr. Philpott was the one of the primary movers and shakers behind the Under Caesar's Sword conference that we attended in Rome, December 10th, 11th, and 12th. We'll debrief a little bit on the conference, but Dan is the author of many books looking at a just and unjust peace. We'll be looking in particular about his analysis of what he calls God's century and the role that religion, resurgent religion, is playing around the world in global politics. This has been pointed out on this program many times over the years, but we are really seeing a resurgence of culturally transformative and significant religion at a time when, if you remember, most of us were growing up, we were told that religion was going to be less and less significant in world affairs. In our lifetime, it's become more and more significant, until almost every day there's a front page story that has to do with the integration of religious faith and public life, public policy, public affairs. So Dan will be joining us. Also, as you know, there's been a historic papal meeting in Havana, Cuba, last Friday. We discussed it briefly, and I said we'd get back together to discuss it when the joint declaration was published, and we're going to do that today with Father Andrew Shirovsky, who joined us before the meeting last week. It's the meeting between Pope Francis and Patriarch Kirill. He is the Russian Orthodox Patriarch of Moscow. Now, there are a number of different Russian Orthodox groups, so it can be confusing. But this does mark a major breakthrough between Rome and Moscow. That's coming up today. Also, we'll take a look with Matthew Bunsen what Pope Francis has been doing in Mexico. He certainly hasn't been mincing any words, and he's challenged church leaders, who are sometimes accused of bending over to Mexicans wealthy and powerful. And he has decided, Pope Francis has gone on the somewhat aggressively, in fact, denouncing the threat of the drug trade and calling for a pastoral plan to help Mexicans. We're also going to take time in the second hour with Dr. Gerard Bradley. Jerry is an outstanding constitutional scholar. And we're going to look at the problem of religious liberty in the 21st century. The Obama administration, as again, we've mentioned time and again on this program, has been the most, in my estimation, the most hostile U.S. administration towards religious liberty that we've ever had. And we're going to talk that over with Jerry. And what are the kind of problems that long-term problems that this may have laid down for us? We'll also ask him to give us some reflections of the late Justice Antonin Scalia. So all that's coming up in this hour, Crest in the Afternoon. We've gotten some great mail on the interview we did on President's Day with Gary Scott Smith, especially concerns about President Obama's Christian faith. We'll talk more about it this week. But now the news with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much. I'll welcome everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, February 17th. It is the feast of the seven founders of the Servite Order, and today's news is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Pope Francis spoke to more than 50,000 young people in a soccer stadium in Mexico yesterday evening. He remarked that during his visit, he has been struck by the vitality, the joy, and the festive spirit of the Mexican people. The Pope quickly cautioned, however, that the young people are not the hope of Mexico. For hope, he said, the nation and its people should turn to Christ. He warned his young audience against placing their trust and their ambition in wealth and power. Francis will fly back to Rome tonight. We will hear more about this trip from Matthew Bunsen later in today's program. New York City Police Commissioner Bill Bratton is pleased to see that a judge is ordering Apple to help the FBI hack into the phone of the San Bernardino shooter.
Because of the continuing effort on the part of the technology companies to arguably respect the right to privacy, but that right to privacy is not a total right in the sense that if it is being used for criminal purposes.
That's Senator Chuck Schumer, who weighed in by saying lawmakers, the heads of tech companies, and the FBI should sit down and find a solution that protects privacy rights but gives law enforcement the resources that are needed. Apple CEO Tim Cook says he's going to fight the judge's order. An explosion targeting Turkish military buses carrying personnel killed at least 28 people and wounded 61 others in the capital city of Ankara Wednesday in what government officials called an intricately planned act of terror. Officials condemned the attacks as contemptible and dastardly, but did not state how many of the dead or wounded were members of the military. They said the vehicles were attacked as they stopped at traffic lights. President Obama appears to have changed his view of the Senate's role in the event of a vacancy on the Supreme Court. Some Senate Republicans are vowing to block any nomination, claiming the next president should decide because Obama is a lame duck. In California yesterday, Obama said the Constitution is clear and the Senate should give his nominee a fair hearing and a timely vote. However, then-Senator Barack Obama supported a filibuster threatened by Democrats to block any vote on former President George W. Bush's nominations of Justice Samuel Alito in 2006. And Monsignor Thomas Hartman, better known as the God Squad priest, has died at a nursing home. He was a prominent figure in New York and rose to national fame in 1987 when he was paired on television with Rabbi Mark Gelman. The two clergymen, known as the Siskel and Ebert of religion, hosted a syndicated program promoting interfaith understanding. The God Squad was on TV for two decades and was eventually seen in 15 million homes nationwide. Hartman was 69 years old and died last night of complications from Parkinson's. And now your fascinating fact of the day. All of the major candidates in the 1992, 1996, and 2008 presidential elections were left-handed, proving that all of us lefties are the smartest. I don't know. For Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon. Well, there was a historic papal meeting between Pope Francis and Patriarch Kirill, who's the Patriarch of the Moscow Russian Orthodox wing, you might say. This competitors, by the way, for Russian Orthodoxy. So why this gets messy. But the meeting between Pope Francis and Patriarch Kirill was long awaited. It was an important step in mending conflicts between East and West. There are lots of lingering questions. They did sign a joint declaration. The Russian Orthodox Church has close ties to Vladimir Putin, and this has been, of course, a big topic on this program, especially as it relates to Ukraine and Ukrainian Catholics. Joining me right now is Father Andriy Shirovsky, We talked last week before the meeting. He is on the faculty of theology at St. Paul University in Ottawa and the founding director of the Sheptytsky Institute. He's the editor-in-chief of Logos, a journal of Eastern Christian Studies. And, Father, it's good to have you back. Thanks.
Thank you, Al. I'm glad to be here.
Now, you are Ukrainian Greek Catholic. Is that right?
Exactly, yes.
Yes. Now that you've read the joint declaration, what do you think? Are you a happy man?
Well, there are parts that make me very happy. You know, the parts that stand up for persecuted Christians in the Middle East and North Africa. The parts that stand up on life issues, that call for cooperation in life issues, in the fight for religious liberty in the face of radical secularism. It's called for young people to get active in the faith and in mission. All those things are great. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Okay.
But there are three paragraphs in which I believe the Russian Orthodox Church, with the help of the Putin government, simply outmaneuvered the Pontifical Council for Christian Unity, so that some three very unfortunate paragraphs make up one. So that's 3 out of 30. 1/10 of the document is severely flawed.
Well, let's let people know some of the history here.
Okay, so paragraph 25.
Before we go there, who in the world is Patriarch Kirill? He's Patriarch of Moscow. What kind of jurisdiction is that?
Well, that's the Russian Orthodox Church. Now, the Patriarchate of Moscow goes back only to 1589. It was created on the basis of the Metropolia of Moscow, which goes back to 1448. Before that, you had the Metropolia of Kyiv, you know, Kyiv, the capital mm-hmm. of Ukraine. But when the head of the Metropolia of Kyiv, Metropolitan Isidore, at the Council of Florence in the 1430s, established full communion with the Church of Rome and the whole Catholic Church, Moscow broke away and created a Metropolia of Moscow, 1448.
Okay.
And since then, the Russians have been separate from the Kievan Church. However, in the 17th century, when the Russians started conquering parts of Ukraine and Belarus, they also finally got their hands on the Metropolia of Kyiv and made it a part of the Russian Orthodox Church. It is actually the mother church for both the Ukrainian Orthodox and the Russian Orthodox, and also for the Ukrainian Greco-Catholics, like myself.
Wow.
The Church of Kyiv, founded in 988, had intermittent relationships with Rome, even after the Orthodox East and the Catholic West went their separate ways. So that okay. in the middle of the 13th century, the Metropolitan of Kyiv was at the Second Council of Lyon. In the middle of the 15th century, the Metropolitan of Kyiv was at the Council of Florence. And then in 1596, the bishops of the Metropolia of Kyiv signed the Union of Brest, coming into full and visible communion with Rome and the Catholic Church. And since then, we've had an uninterrupted life in communion. That's Ukrainian Greco-Catholics.
Okay.
Now, we have our brothers and sisters, Ukrainian Orthodox, mm-hmm. and some of them are under the jurisdiction of this Patriarch of Moscow. The majority of them actually are not. They want to be independent under the Ukrainian Orthodox Church Kievan Patriarchate, but that is not recognized by the rest of the Orthodox world because Moscow says, don't you dare.
Yes.
And, okay, so it's a complicated picture. And
I
wouldn't be surprised if listeners are saying, whoa, my head's spinning. Yeah, it is complicated.
But that's important to understand paragraph 25.
Right. Because paragraph 25 says something very good. It says that even though the method of uniatism is not going to be used anymore, in other words, nobody's going to go in and try to get a piece of the Orthodox Church to go Catholic. But it says, nevertheless, the Eastern Catholic churches that already exist have a right to exist, and they have a right to take care of all the needs of their faithful. Well, this is something that the Orthodox and Catholic churches agreed on back in 1993. So 23 years later, finally Moscow is agreeing with the rest of the Orthodox world on this, that we Eastern Catholics actually have a right to exist.
But are the Eastern Catholic churches regarded as churches, or are they just ecclesial communities?
Right. Well, there's some very... Of course, they should be regarded as churches, and Rome certainly regards them as churches. The Catholic Church is a communion of 23 churches, and these churches govern themselves. They're churches sui juris, which means they govern themselves. So in the eyes of the Catholic Church, they are certainly churches. But in this document, for some unknown reason, they're called ecclesial communities, which is a term that the Catholic Church uses usually for Protestants.
Right, right. Because ecclesial communities are generally thought not to have all the marks of the Church.
Exactly. So now, here's the mystery. If Cardinal Kurt Koch, the prefect of the Pontifical Council for Christian Unity, was involved in the drafting of this, how could he of all people, knows what those terms mean?
Yep.
That's his bread and butter.
Right.
How could he have allowed that to happen? Well, because he was outmaneuvered or maybe just gave up and said, okay, whatever you guys want, let's just make this meeting happen.
Yeah.
Because Pope Francis wants to embrace Patriarch Kirill because he wants to talk to him face to face. And you guys have been for three decades putting off this meeting. Why? It was always because of these Ukrainian Catholics. We couldn't possibly have a meeting because the Ukrainian Catholics exist. And it's like now they said, okay, let them exist. But we'll see how that translates into actions, because Moscow has been reviling the Ukrainian Catholics for the last three decades, and it's been bad. The other thing is, Moscow has not ever agreed to hold a meeting in which they would discuss what happened 70 years ago. In a couple of weeks, it's going to be the 70th anniversary of the destruction of the Ukrainian Catholic Church.
Father, because we're out of time on this, I'm going to ask you to join me again when we can give more time to this 70-year recognition. But great job. Thank you.
Are you looking for a great deal on a new or certified pre-owned vehicle and want to be treated with dignity and respect? Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. And during our Ram Truck Month sale, you can lease a new 2016 Ram for as low as $198 per month. Or a Chrysler Town & Country minivan, Jeep Cherokee, all-new Jeep Renegade, or Dodge Journey for as low as $169 per month. Only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
This is Reno Frazetta with Smart Money Financial Advisors. Let me share with you a funny little secret. When I was in high school many moons ago, my extracurricular activity was spending time at the local brokerage, learning about investing in the financial markets. Now, as corny as that sounds, although I didn't spend all of my time there, that truly was my first passion. And over the years, I've seen and experienced many successes, and also some pretty hard lessons. Today, the work I do for my clients is the beneficial outcome of all that experience. My clients rely on me to help them make good choices and avoid mistakes. Now, unfortunately, my services aren't for everyone, but if you're willing to pay a bit more for an experienced, trusted, and dedicated financial advisor, then let's have a conversation. Call my office for a free consultation at 248-468-4401. That's 248-468-4401.
Advisory services offered through Prosperity Capital Advisors, a registered investment advisor.
Serving the Agent Lovingly Today, or SALT, is a one-week service program for women ages 18 and above. Live and serve the elderly alongside the sisters. No previous experience required. The program includes free room and board. Your only cost is traveling to us. We have three programs this summer in New York, Kentucky, and Dublin, Ireland. SALT participants are the person of Christ to the elderly they visit. Google CarmeliteSisters.com/SALT to learn more about this nonprofit organization.
Did you know that Ave Maria Town in Southwest Florida is really growing?
Tell me about it.
Ave Maria truly is one of the nation's fastest-growing master-planned new home communities.
Is that because there's no snow?
Well, the weather sure helps, but Ave Maria, Florida is a unique place.
How so?
The town of Ave Maria has been designed as a hometown for the 21st century, a place where residents of different generations and backgrounds can find all they need to live life to the fullest. School, shopping, employment opportunities, and more. In addition, the presence of Ave Maria University, a Catholic university that is both excellent and affordable.
Sounds great. What else?
Houses are being sold starting in the low 200s with several communities to choose from. There's a private Catholic K-12 school along with golf, bike trails, a fitness center, not to mention several daily masses and adoration within walking distance.
So how can I arrange a visit?
Call Carol at 239-249-2111. That's Carol Carpenter at Berkshire Hathaway, 239-249-2111.
Hey, it's Teresa Tomeo in studio with my good friend Steve Ray, author, speaker, and fearless pilgrimage leader who is taking us to Rome in early September for the canonization of Mother Teresa. So excited, Steve.
Yes, when you looked at her, she was a very small woman in stature, but she was very large in the impact she made for Jesus Christ in the world. And
Amen.
We're going to be there for her canonization in Rome.
This is awesome. So more information, AveMariaRadio.net.
And click on the pilgrimage link.
And check it out online again, AveMariaRadio.net. Hope to see you there.
You might have seen a copy of the Michigan Catholic newspaper sitting in the back of your church, but have you picked one up lately? If so, you'll find we're not only Catholic news you can trust, but Catholic news you can use. Find out where your favorite priest is being assigned, read our popular Q&A columns, and learn more about your faith by reading the Michigan Catholic. Talk to your pastor or call 313-224-8000 or visit themichigancatholic.com.
I'm Al Cresta. We're here in South Bend, Indiana at Redeemer Radio and having a great time. We'll be here all week, in fact. And joining me right now is Dr. Dan Philpott. Dan teaches at the University of Notre Dame, where he's professor of political science. He's the author of Just and Unjust Peace, An Ethic of Political Reconciliation, and a book that I've spent some time in called God's Century, Resurgent Religion and Global Politics. Dan was one of the movers and shakers behind the Under Caesar's Sword Conference, December 10th, 11th, and 12th in Rome, that Nick and I attended and broadcast from. And Dan, it's great to have you back. Thanks.
Great to be back, Al.
This was the conference was spectacular, and for people who maybe don't remember the conversations that we had on it, this conference, the objectives of the conference, first of all, to roll out the results of the world's first systematic global investigation into the responses of Christian communities to the violation of their religious freedom. That was new material.
Yes, we had sent out 14 world-class researchers of global Christianity to go to over 30 countries to look firsthand and do interviews and talk to people about how Christian communities are responding to persecution. What do they do?
Yeah. And as I remember, the findings were roughly kind of threefold. They learn how to cope. They learn how to construct bridges to the – and then they sometimes have direct confrontation.
That's right, yes.
One of the means of coping is fleeing.
Yes.
How often is that the case?
Well, in some countries like Saudi Arabia or Iran, it's extremely difficult just to be a Christian. You're so driven inside. And so people basically are trying to find strategies just to keep alive their faith and the practice of their faith. And sometimes they find creative ways to sort of, help the regime to think that they're okay.
Yeah.
And I think of the early church and the way that some of the early church Christians wrote these letters to basically make appeals to the emperor saying, you know, we're good citizens. Our Christianity makes us good citizens. You should realize that. And we're not a threat to anyone.
Right, right. Yeah. And at times, though, there has to be direct confrontation. Where are the places where this has been most common?
Well, you see that in countries where there's, you know, where there's a little bit more room for that. Take a country like India, which is paradoxically, you know, arguably the world's largest democracy. But you also have this very virulent strand of Hindu nationalism.
Yeah.
The current government is a Hindu nationalist government. And so you have this paradox of, you know, pretty sharp cases of repression against Christians and minority Muslims. But also the, you know, putative openness of the system allows for some protest and for some expression, you know, against the regime.
So there are places like that where you've got a democratic government that does allow just to fight back against persecution.
Even Pakistan is a paradoxical case. It's very hardcore Islamist in some ways, but it's also a democracy. And, one of the main parties, the People's Party, is a secular party. And so, you know, they say that there's room for protest, and there are protests and demonstrations and so forth. You have both that, and you have some harsh cases of Islamist repression.
Yeah.
And so,
we had the assassination of Shabazz Bhatti.
Yes, that's right.
His brother Paul was at Rome at the conference.
Yes, exactly, and spoke very movingly of his brother's experience and of his experience and responding to that.
Yeah.
But Pakistan's a place where, I mean, Shabazz Bhatti is a great example. He was a minister in the government, so it's not as though he was oppressed or sidelined or what have you.
Right.
He was allowed to be minister, but you also take your life into your hands if you're talking about things like religious freedom or the rights of Christians or what have you.
Yeah. I mean, I think today there's a terrorist bombing in Ankara, Turkey, a place where, again, it's supposed to be one of the more mild Muslim regimes.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah. We're talking about Hindu nationalism. Let's just switch gears a bit here. Your book, God's Century, Resurgent Religion and Global Politics, takes a look at the resurgence of religion around the globe as a major factor in cultural formation. And, when I was growing up, it was common to say that every time you looked out the window, there'd be less and less publicly active religion.
Yes.
It was kind of going away.
Yes, right.
And the old secularization theory. And,
yes.
And then I'm not sure when that began to change, 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, people began noticing that around the country, around the world, you have resurgent Islam. You mentioned resurgent Hindu nationalism.
Yes.
Where else do we see a rise in religious, socially active, culturally transformative religion?
Yes. Well, we argue that in every religion, in virtually every region of the globe, there's been something of a religious resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
And the Islamic resurgence is major, Hindu activism. You also, in Buddhism, for instance, you've seen a resurgence of engagement in politics. Now, there's a peaceful strain of human rights and environmentalism and that kind of thing, which we probably associate with Buddhism in the public mind. But there's also a very kind of nasty strain in places like Sri Lanka and Burma, where you have nationalist Buddhist governments, kind of like the one in India, who are saying this is a homeland for the Buddhists, they're closely, there's no separation between Sangha and state. there's the monks are very close to the power, and it makes for a kind of repressive cocktail.
Yeah. A lot of people forget that the Dalai Lama is actually a very high-profile political figure.
Yes.
As well. I mean, he's been, his people have been oppressed by the Chinese communist government.
Yeah, he actually started off life in the late 50s as a kind of a militant. He was part of a kind of resistance group. So he wasn't always the nonviolent, but then that developed over time.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, to what do you attribute this rise of global active religion again?
Yeah. Well, interestingly, we would argue that the puzzle is more why the secularization. And so well, we argue people have always been religious. They're no less or more. We like to turn it around there. They're no more or less religious than they have ever have been. But what happens is a kind of there was a very long historical rise of secular politics in the modern state, which tended to displace religion from politics and ever more privatize it. Historically, the French Revolution was a major juncture, but then it takes on radical forms in the 20th century with communism and the Mexican Mexican Revolution and so forth, really trying to eradicate religion. And, of course, that was present in the Soviet Union and in China, major parts of the world. Well, I think one of the things that happened is a lot of these secular experiments just kind of ran out of steam. I mean, communism at some point, you know, became kind of discredited. People realized it wasn't working. A lot of the secular Arab nationalists like Nasser yeah. and people like that, well, it wasn't working. They were economic disasters. They were corrupt. And mm-hmm. by around the late 60s, people started to, they just lost legitimacy.
Yeah.
You know, after they had become newly independent countries, they kind of had the momentum. But then, so in a sense, people who are still religious started looking more to their religion for political involvement and started coalescing, going back to that religion, and then political involvement, you know, coalesced around it.
Yeah. And a vibrant religious faith produces communities.
Yes.
Societies.
Yes.
And the question always is, well, how does that voluntaristic community relate to the law codes of the state that they're a part of?
Yes, that's right.
And whether those, who gets to make the laws, or what's the source of law? Yes.
Yes, that's right.
That's a good question.
Yes, and that's why in our book, Al, we look at the whole variety of ways in which religious communities engage the state, engage politics, engage the law. And sometimes that can be in a way that affirms and strengthens democracy. In some cases, it can take very, you know, violent forms and touch off massive civil wars. And,
yeah.
and there's a whole range of, and when we look to the political theology, the kind of ways in which religious communities conceive politics based upon their theological foundations as being critically important.
Yeah. Now, recently there's been this Marrakesh Declaration out of Morocco,
yes.
which has been held out as maybe a way forward for Muslim nations. It certainly is softer in tone than a lot of things I've read.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance to look at it?
Heard about it. I haven't looked at it in detail.
Fair enough. Then we've seen a little bit
of commentary on it, but
yeah,
can't quite speak for myself.
I'm always curious to see if there's going to be an Islamic movement which is going to be able to affirm full religious liberty
mm-hmm,
for
mm-hmm.
non-Muslims.
Yes.
And
yes.
This comes closer, but
yes.
I'm not sure it gets there yet. Yeah.
Well, I think you're getting at an important point, Al, that, you know, full religious liberty, you know, not just kind of protected second-class
right.
status or what have you. Full religious liberty is still a minority view in Islam, if you look in a global sense.
Yep.
However, there are very important thinkers and very important schools and movements which do hold the view. And even some important movements in places like Indonesia, the two major Islamic movements, Nahdlatul Ulama and Muhammadiyah, are both largely in favor of religious liberty.
Mm-hmm.
In Turkey, the Islamic Party, the Justice and Development Party, has actually challenged the kind of harshly secularist regime and actually is trying to move the country somewhat in the direction of religious liberty.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes there can be movements in Islam that do hold and advocate for religious liberty in sincere ways.
Yeah. So you anticipate that this religiously or culturally active religious faith is going to remain active, and that secularization was the exception.
Yes. Yeah, we see religion as here to stay, religious engagement in politics. We date the resurgence around the late 60s. I mean, of course, one can't say one date for the whole world, and give or take some. But roughly in the last 40, 50 years, we've seen a resurgence of religion. And we think there's no reason that this is going to go away. It's more the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at the secularization as more the exception.
The late 60s, that's about the time that those secular Arab rulers are showing
yeah.
their inability
yeah.
to bring about a better state of affairs.
Yeah.
It's when groups like the Muslim Brotherhood begin to
yes.
reassert themselves.
That's right. Yeah.
Is that true in India as well?
Yeah, in India, that's roughly the same time, yes. And then in the early 80s, the BJP party, the Hindu party, actually starts to realize some electoral gains.
Yes,
and
okay.
so you start to see that registering in the elections.
Okay.
And then 98 is the first time that they actually won the prime ministership.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, I'm always fascinated by when things happen and sometimes why they happen
around the globe with no apparent direct connection.
Yes,
things
right.
just kind of happen at that time.
Yeah, that, right. They seemingly disconnected, but yet you can see a trend where a lot of things are happening. Interestingly, some of the very forces that people thought would kind of do away with religion, like technology and globalization right. and communication and very modern, the internet and so forth, those were the, you know, the secularization theorists thought that those things would do away with religion, but they have actually become tools of religion and things that religion has used to spread their ideas and their faith around the globe and spread this political engagement around the globe.
Yeah. My guest, Dr. Dan Philpott, is the author of God's Century, Resurgent Religion and Global Politics. Dan was one of the leaders of the Under Caesar Sword Conference in Rome, and we're talking again about a number of things, religious...
Charity Mobile is the only pro-life mobile phone corporation. LifeSite News recently featured Corporate Watchdog Second Vote and their research of corporations that fund Planned Parenthood. The article concluded that only 7 corporations are ranked as being pro-life, while 234 corporations have abortion-supporting scores. Charity Mobile is one of the 7 pro-life corporations and the only mobile phone company. 5% of your monthly talk plan price goes to the pro-life charity of your choice, and there are no contracts, no termination fees, and no risk with your 30-day trial. Call 877-474-3662 or go to CharityMobile.com today. Mention Ave Maria Radio and get a free 4G LTE smartphone plus free activation and free shipping. Life is calling. Take it with you. Call 877-474-3662 or go to CharityMobile.com today.
This is Lavinia Spirito for Catholic Way Bible Study. In Acts 1:8, Jesus tells the disciples to go back to Jerusalem. You will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem. The word translated as power is also the root for our word for dynamite. Jesus is promising an explosive power that will enable us to witness to the nations and live a powerful Christian life. That same powerful Holy Spirit is received in baptism and confirmation. As baptized and confirmed Catholics, we already have all we need to live life through the power of the Holy Spirit. If we remove the obstacles of our own understanding and lack of preparation and move with the Holy Spirit into the mission He has given us, we will change the world.
Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
Republicans, Democrats, no matter which political party is in office, there are always investment opportunities to be found. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds won't compromise the moral beliefs of its investors. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. The portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and moral values. Call toll-free 866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
The Holy Trinity Apostolate Lenten Symposium is Saturday, March 12th, and this year's theme is the Jubilee Year of Mercy. Auxiliary Bishop of Detroit, the Most Reverend Arturo Cepeda, is one of this year's keynote speakers.
To hear the Word, become the Word, and proclaim the Word.
Father Roger J. Landry, National Chaplain of Catholic Voices, comes from Washington, D.C.
If the Church could have only one or the other for a generation, either solid preaching but no access to the sacraments, or universal access to the sacraments but no or bad preaching, which would be more important to take?
Other speakers include Father Gregory Bromlich, Father Timothy Gallagher, Father Joseph Horn, Sister Yvonne Mary Luce, and Patrick O'Meara. The symposium is at St. Cyril and Methodius on Ryan and 18 Mile in Sterling Heights. There's a youth symposium for ages 14 to 17 led by Father Steve Mateo. For ticket information, go to HolyTrinityApostolate.com and register. That's HolyTrinityApostolate.com.
Thank you.
And a good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. We're here in South Bend, Indiana at Redeemer Radio. My guest, Dr. Dan Philpott, and I'm talking about resurgent religion around the globe. Again, I like to point out, when I was growing up, I can remember my first memory of this discussion. I'm in seventh grade. Now, I don't know anything. I'm not especially precocious on these matters, but I was raised Catholic, and I can remember my seventh grade teacher telling me that religion basically was a thing of the past. And I'm thinking, oh, okay. And here we are, that seventh grade, so what am I, 50 years since then? And we're talking more about religion in global affairs, even American politics, than when I was a kid. So this is interesting. Let's take it to the United States then, because it seems to me that this administration has been more hostile to religious liberty than previous administrations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, would you say that they're operating under the old model, that somehow religion is becoming more and more privatized, more and more marginalized?
Yes, one does sense some kind of secularist thinking in the Obama administration. By secularist, I mean a kind of ideology that says that religion ought to be privatized.
Yeah.
And this ideology has been, in central command in places like France, and, we call the laïcité model, that it means that religion ought to be privatized and not part of public life, not part of kind of involved in politics and so forth. And I think some of that thinking very much seems to be behind things like the HHS mandate and other governmental decisions.
Yeah. I was surprised. I never thought I would see an American president do the things on religious liberty that we saw President Obama do.
Well, indeed, America also really has been a kind of alternative, the leading alternative to the French model. I talk about the French Revolution and the American Revolution as the two Western models. And America said very much that religion is good for democracy.
Yeah, it's a friendly force, not a hostile force.
Absolutely. And government's role is to try to create as much space for religious people to be religious.
Yeah.
And not to try to manage it or to sideline it. Now, there have to be some constraints, of course. But seeing religion as kind of a integral to political participation.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the academic world, how is this being regarded as an area of inquiry, right? And secondly, as something to be practiced? Are scholars increasingly respectful of religious studies in sociology and political science and law?
Yes.
And secondly, is there a corresponding growing respect for personal religious practice?
Well, let's take each of those things. On the first one is, are they starting to study it and recognize it analytically? I think there's good news. So my field is, just as a great example, international relations in political science. And I wrote a book in 2001 about the role of religion in shaping the international system. And just before I published the book, I decided I would go over to the library, and I looked at the four leading journals in my field. I looked over the last 20 years, and I tried to figure out, how many pieces have been done on religion, where religion was a major theme. And I counted six. And this was something out of about 1,600 journal articles.
Wow.
So, and I put that in my in the first chapter of the book, and that figure became widely quoted.
Mm-hmm.
And however, the good news is, beginning around 99 or so, people in my field have started to study religion. And the first wave of people was just saying, secularization theory had it all wrong. Religion matters again. Mm-hmm. And then when I was part of a small working group based at Harvard on this, and then our working group started in 2000. Well, then the attacks of September 11th happened, and if there's any doubt in anybody's mind that religion matters in international affairs, you just can't deny it anymore.
Right.
So the good news is that since then, there's been a kind of growing subfield and a growing literature, and students are starting to be exposed to the idea, and that was the point of our book, God Century, was to create something for the college classroom. Yeah. And it's become very much an accepted idea now that religion matters in international relations, and we're starting to study how it matters.
I was going to say, is it to the point where people are saying that there are certain types of religion which lead towards human flourishing and others that don't?
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to get at. It's kind of like, under what are the conditions that lead religion to be, you know, part of the process of justice and democracy and progress, and when is it more likely to take a violent turn?
Okay.
And so those are some of the things we're trying to understand now. Now, I would still say, though, that, you know, proportionate to the global headlines, I would still say that the place of religion in our field is still too small.
Okay.
And it doesn't have the status of things like nuclear bombs and, you know, other things that have long been kind of prestigious topics.
Yes.
But it has improved a great deal.
Now, to the second point, then, since there's a growing respect for study of religion's impact in these areas of society, politics, is there a corresponding respect for personal religious practice and commitment?
I think so. I think in most of academia, I've been in both secular universities and now in Notre Dame, a Catholic university. I think most colleagues would say, well, if you're religious and you practice your religion, you know, that's fine. That's something I respect, and maybe we can talk about it over a dinner party or something like that. And so there's a kind of basic respect. Now, if you were to say bring that into, say, you know, university governance or something like that, or into the views of the institution and that sort of thing, then, you know, especially the secular universities, then that might start to be a kind of, they would say, well, wait, that doesn't belong here.
Okay. George Marsden years ago published a book called Soul of the University, I think,
yes.
In which he pointed out that something, I'm speaking generally here,
right.
But he pointed out that, you know, there are all kinds of perspectival approaches. So you can have a feminist approach to literature, or you can have a Latina approach to politics. But almost nobody talks about a Catholic approach to this. And,
right.
And so you don't see very many chairs endowed for the Catholic studies of history or something like that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and that's right. I mean, and you can look back to my field. So you can study the role of religion in international affairs and talk about whether religion leads to war and peace and that kind of thing. But if I were to do something different and say, I want to take a Christian view of international relations, or a Catholic view, where I say take the view of the papal encyclicals and try to look at the political order as something that God ordained.
This is a vision of the political order. How does it play out?
Yeah, from a Catholic perspective. Now, that's something when I was, say, back at Santa Barbara or my graduate work at Harvard, would have been a harder sell.
Okay.
And now at Notre Dame, I'll give credit. It's really trying to be a Catholic university, and there it's more welcome.
Yeah, well, we hope so.
Yeah. which is refreshing to be in Notre Dame in that sense.
What is the resistance to that idea that there is, especially with Catholics, there actually is a body of literature.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a hierarchy.
Yes.
There's a magisterium. Yes. In other words, we can identify. You might have trouble asking what is an evangelical approach to politics,
right?
Because there are lots of different traditions there.
Yes,
but Catholic. You actually do have some normative features.
Yes.
You can say, you know, this is the Pope's approach over the years. Here's the social teaching of the Church. So what's the resistance?
Well, it's a great, excellent question. I might also point out that if you look back to, say, the 1940s and 1950s, I mean, you had some thinkers like, take my field, international relations. You had some thinkers like Jacques Maritain and Reinhold Niebuhr, Catholic and Protestant,
too. Yeah, that's right.
Actually did take a Christian view of international relations.
And they were quite
respected. So I think the example is, the answer is secularization. So in the 60s and 70s, the kind of secular mindset really set in.
Okay.
And so that came to be seen increasingly as kind of a strange thing. And even in the 70s, you could see some Christian thinkers, but, you know, the field took a more scientific theory testing, experimental view of things, which is really deeply secular in its kind of view of what we can know. And so now today, if I tried to be a Niebuhr or a Maritain, or if I were at a secular university and say, I want to bring in the thinking of the papal and goals to study this, or I try to bring that into the classroom, that would be seen as a real strange thing to do.
Hmm. And, is it because they're afraid you're going to do proselytizing, or is it because they think that religious affirmations are like a wax nose that you can twist any way you want, and they don't have a lot of meaningful cognitive content?
Well, that's right. I think there was a kind of a view of knowledge and of study that became very, very secularized, and a view probably that, you know, the public order is a secular place. And so if you're trying to bring in your Christian perspective to study this subject matter, again, we're not just talking about trying to understand religion, talking about bringing your Christian perspective to looking at war and peace and all those things. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you're doing something that isn't really shared. If you were to do that in the classroom, well, the problem is what about all those students who don't share your perspective, professor?
Yeah.
You know, now
that's your project. That's kind of like your hobby.
That's right.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe at an earlier time in American history, it would have been Christianity was much more a part of the public conversation, such that that would have seemed more normal.
Yeah.
But things have changed a lot.
They have. I mean, it's amazing reading older literature. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was the 19th century where you couldn't really talk about political science if you were unwilling to consider the role of the king in ancient Israel in the conflict over whether it was Israel should have had a king or not.
Yeah, that was part and parcel of the subject.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's interesting, really, today we don't see very many, Reinhold Niebuhrs or Jacques Maritains.
I've noticed that, yeah.
People who are really, you know, taking a look at the kind of international order or, you know, from a kind of Christian theological, political theological perspective.
But there's no, in this conversation with you, though, I'm saying to myself, well, that may be just for a time. We may be just be passing out of that period, in fact.
Yes,
maybe
yes.
We're at the point now where people recognize the limits of secularization and they're going to be more open to somebody like Reinhold Niebuhr or Jacques Maritain.
Yes. Yeah, I think perhaps there's a space there for some intellectual leadership, for somebody to emerge and show the way. I think it might have to be a little bit different. That thinker or that theorist would probably have to say more about, you know, how religion gets along in a pluralistic world and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to somehow acknowledge that we're in a time where, you know, where this needs to be kind of reestablished again and address that question.
And that's the pluralism's not going away.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, interestingly, Peter Berger, the great theorist at Boston University, he's the one who famously in 1968 said the world is becoming secular.
Right.
And that's when Time magazine had its cover that said God is dead.
Right.
But Berger, with great humility, and he's a fantastic scholar, one of my heroes, but in 99 he said, I was wrong and the world is becoming furiously religious, or is furiously religious. But he said, the prevailing paradigm now is pluralism.
Yeah.
That's what we have to...
Yeah.
That's what we have to grapple with.
Yeah, that seems to me that's not going away. And actually, that's not a threat to the Christian faith, because it's simply a recognition that people have dignity and they have jurisdiction in living out their own experiments in faith. We may not like what it is.
Yes,
but,
right.
Look, God apparently thought it was okay with Adam and Eve. And look at the consequences there.
So. That's exactly right. And our own teaching calls us to respect the free spaces and the dignity and the right to dissent.
You're working on a project now with Islam and religious liberty, right?
Yes, that's right.
Well,
yes,
we'll get together.
I can't wait.
Some time. I'm anxious to talk with you about that. Greatly appreciate your work, Dan, and for the invitation to be with you in Rome. We'll stay in touch and keep going.
Thank you for coming. It was a wonderful time.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful to be with you.
Dr. Dan Philpott here at Notre Dame. I'm Al Cresta. More coming up.
Did you know that Ave Maria Town in Southwest Florida is really growing?
Tell me about it.
Ave Maria truly is one of the nation's fastest-growing master-planned new home communities.
Is that because there's no snow?
Well, the weather sure helps, but Ave Maria, Florida is a unique place.
How so?
The town of Ave Maria has been designed as a hometown for the 21st century, a place where residents of different generations and backgrounds can find all they need to live life to the fullest. School, shopping, employment opportunities, and more. In addition, the presence of Ave Maria University, a Catholic university that is both excellent and affordable.
Sounds great. What else?
Houses are being sold starting in the low 200s with several communities to choose from. There's a private Catholic K-12 school along with golf, bike trails, a fitness center, not to mention several daily masses and adoration within walking distance.
So how can I arrange a visit?
Call Carol at 239-249-2111. That's Carol Carpenter at Berkshire Hathaway, 239-249-2111.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. With me, Steve Ray. We're going to be traveling in the footsteps of St. Paul with Bishop Earl Boyer.
We're going to be on a ship, and it's going to take us through Italy, Greece, and Turkey. We're going to visit all the sites of St. Paul and even the Blessed Virgin Mary. We're going to step back 2,000 years.
This is wonderful. St. Paul, of course, the great missionary of early Christianity. It's an amazing experience, isn't it, going to the exact locations?
It is. It's like taking black and white and turning it into Technicolor.
So again, this is coming up this November. Go to AveMariaRadio.net.
Click on the pilgrimage link.
This Ave Maria radio program is brought to you in part by St. Gregory Retreat Centers, the new standard for recovery. St. Gregory Retreat Centers offers substance abuse treatment options using traditional Catholic teaching about virtue and access to daily Mass and reconciliation, combined with the latest evidence-based practices in substance abuse. More information is available at 888-778-5833. Or online at stgregoryctr.com.
It's good to be with you here. I'm Al Cresta. We're in South Bend, Indiana at Redeemer Radio, having a wonderful time. We'll be here all week, in fact, and talking with a number of Catholic scholars in the University of Notre Dame. And we hope to be able to do this on a fairly regular basis. The excuse that we had for being able to come here this week is an invitation from Legatus, the Catholic organization for Catholic CEOs, where I'll be presenting a talk in video presentation on, in fact, how to think about Islam as a Catholic. On the one hand, you've got, of course, the call that all human beings are made in the image and likeness of God, and we have a responsibility to invite all to share in Jesus' redemptive sacrifice and his resurrection power. But at the same time, you're dealing with a religious tradition there in Islam that seems to have no respect for what we have accepted as the indispensable principles of religious liberty. So how do you, this thing gets complicated between the politics of it, the pastoral dimension of it, the evangelistic dimension of it. So I try to work through that tonight. And I'll be with you for the next hour. We've got a lot happening. I'm Al Cresta.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
It may be cold outside, but the deals are hot inside. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and during Ram Truck Month, you can drive away in a new 2016 Ram truck for as low as $198 per month. Ram sales are up 40%, so come in and see for yourself why everyone is switching over to Ram. Great quality, bold looks, affordable payments. Only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Serving the Aged Lovingly Today, or SALT, is a one-week service program for women ages 18 and above. Live and serve the elderly alongside the sisters. No previous experience required. The program includes free room and board. Your only cost is traveling to us. We have three programs this summer, New York, Kentucky, and Dublin, Ireland. SALT participants are the person of Christ to the elderly they visit. Google CarmeliteSisters.com/SALT to learn more about this nonprofit organization.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a